Blog Talk Radio. I look in the mirror, I don't see wrinkles. When I look in the mirror, I see hair. When I look in the mirror, I don't see wrinkles. When I look in the mirror, I see hair.
Right. So I'm on. Okay. That was the most fascinating thing you'd ever see.
Tell me all about it.
I know. Well, I could say goodbye to him and keep going on the show.
Yeah.
So you're all set up?
I'm all set up.
Now, I'm not hearing anything like it's one. Oh, no. No, I meant like the lady who says it's 1 minute. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, that's why I'm 17 minutes in. Hello, Dr. Kennedy.
Hi, how are you?
I am good. Now, we're not on the air this minute, but we're going to be very quickly. And then during each of our breaks, we're going to take a very short break so we can get a whole hour in with the breaks with you and get you finished by 2, okay?
Sounds great.
Will he hear music?
Yes, he will.
Good. You'll hear music, you'll hear me introduce, and then we'll rock and roll. I'm ready, Stuart.
Sounds
go
good.
Ahead.
When I look in the mirror, I don't see wrinkles. When I look in the mirror, I see hair.
On his head and not his shoulders. And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. We are now, I think, in 38 states. 34 was last week. So we are growing. We are powerful. And we are bringing you the news, mostly the good news, about successful aging. And boy, do I have a treat for you today. The Buck Institute president and CEO, Dr. Brian Kennedy, who, by the way, I have mentioned several times on the show because I was very excited to see him debate at Independence Squared, and there's some information on that on our blog as well, is here to answer questions about research, and I mean scientific research, in aging, what's possible, and what's happening. Thank you so much, Dr. Kennedy, for being with us.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
So first, just tell us a little bit about the Buck Institute, and then we'll talk about some of the research that you're doing there.
Yeah, happy to. So our institute opened its doors in 1999, and we had what at that time was a very unique concept, the idea that we were going to target human health span. And the concept essentially was that we recognize that aging is the biggest risk factor for a whole range of different chronic diseases that we're scared of. And we want to understand what is it about getting old that enables people to get sick and how do we prevent that. So we run like an academic research lab. We have about 21 professors all doing different kinds of research to try to understand how aging enables disease.
So I took a wonderful tour of the Buck Institute, and I saw, you know, people working on worms, people working on flies. I did not see people working on mice, but I know they do. How are you using these types of organisms to solve some of our problems of aging or the diseases that develop because of aging?
Well, I think the somewhat surprising thing is that all of these different organisms age very much like a human ages, except that they do it a lot faster. And so we can learn a lot about the aging process by studying simple animals like worms and flies and yeast, develop hypotheses from them about what causes aging, test that in animal models like mice that live a little bit longer but are closer to humans, and then hopefully develop interventions that we can use to keep humans healthy longer. And I think the field is really at that stage. If you're a mouse, you're in good shape. We know how to make you live healthy longer. But now we need to take that knowledge and figure out how to apply it to a human population.
So what I was understanding was that we're really at a crossroads here. We're really at a transition point. You've done enough research. You've had enough geniuses sitting in the labs, and I saw a lot of them, by the way. And they have been able to discover how to make organisms live longer. And now the question they're looking at is, why is what they did successful so that it could be translated to the human? Now, is there anything in Alzheimer's or Parkinson's, any other area that's already coming out of this that is where there are people who are being helped or part of the research?
Yeah, I think I should broaden a little bit the spectrum of what we do for people. And so we also have people that focus on diseases like Alzheimer's or Parkinson's. And again, they're taking this approach about how is the aging, why do you get Alzheimer's when you're 75 and 80, not 85 and not 25? And it turns out that a lot of the risk factors for Alzheimer's overlap with those that drive normal aging. So we've actually started reaching out to people who are diagnosed with mild cognitive impairments. This is like very early stage of progression toward dementia, and trying to address as many of these risk factors as we can. Maybe there's 20 or 25 of them, and these people have, you know, several of them that are out of the normal range. Maybe their vitamin D levels are too low, or they're not sleeping enough, their diet's poor. And what we're trying to figure out is if we can correct not just one thing, but 10 of these things at the same time, can we improve function in people and allow them to continue with their normal lives. Now, I'm not predicting this approach is going to cure Alzheimer's disease. I think that what we're trying to do is give people an extra few years of high functionality. And so that's something we're already doing with people. We have clinics. They come in and they spend 4 days getting educated on this and a personal sort of approach that they can take with lifestyle and supplements that might help them stay functional. So that's one way we're trying to reach out and transition what we've learned in animals to humans.
So let's take a look at the breakthroughs you had and what you've learned about lengthening life and lengthening healthy life, what I call HALE, health-adjusted life expectancy. At least that's what my world calls it. That's the insurance world and the financial world calls that a health-adjusted life expectancy. How much of this is associated with things in our control, like food and exercise and all the things we hear about, as opposed to purely our genetics?
I think most of the studies suggest that for the average person in the population, genetics plays a minority role, that the lifestyle and environment probably are the biggest factors. That's not to say genetics aren't important. It's just to say that those other factors are really important. Now, there are exceptions to that. So people, centenarians, for instance, people that stay healthy for a very long time, they tend to be genetically driven. So they often, we say they chose the right parents because their parents often live to a very old age and their siblings live to an old age. And so those are the exceptions, though, to the rule. I think for most of us, it's likely to be largely driven by environment.
Yeah, you know, when I was researching for some of my work, I heard the phrase the Methuselah gene. And I think that may be what you're talking about, but you don't have to have the Methuselah gene to live longer. And I wanted you to, before we take our break, a little bit of a definition. I look at lifespan and life expectancy as something different. Do you, and does it really matter?
Yeah, I think that the way I would define that is the lifespan is sort of the maximum lifespan of the population. So if we looked at the longest lived humans, they're around 120. The longest person was Jean Comont. She was from French, and she lived 122. So that, to me, is lifespan, whereas life expectancy is what the average person can expect to live, which is the average or median life expectancy. And that's closer to 80, depending on what culture and society you live in. So life expectancy is going up dramatically over the last century, and right now the data suggests, for instance, if you're a man in the U.S., you're living 1 year longer for every 5 years you live. So I like to tell people they're getting a 20% return on investment.
Right.
But it's unclear whether lifespan or maximum lifespan is going up at that. And I think that a lot of people still debate that. In animal models, we can make lifespan or maximum lifespan go up as well, but the data in humans is less clear.
So 1 year for every 5 years you live is what's happening here in Western culture. Do you have, we talk about life expectancy as being, you said, close to 80. Is that about the same for men and women?
Women live a few years longer than men. It ranges from something like 3 years in some cultures to as much as 12 in others. For instance, in Russia, female life expectancy is a lot longer than men, and that's largely because of alcohol consumption and other things in the male population. But almost everywhere, and in many species, animal models, females live longer than men.
So when we come back, we're going to talk about a couple of other things, one of them being genetics, in the sense of should we know what our genetics are and what's new
in science to help us understand our own profile. We hear about things like 23andMe and places where you could spend $99 and get an analysis. Is it true? And is it good? So that's one of the things we'll talk about. Another thing when we come back is, I know there's a debate. This all started when I heard Dr. Kennedy actually debate at Independence Squared on whether we should be living longer. Now, I have to tell my audience, for me, there's no debate. When I was practicing law, there would be people who didn't want to make a will. They didn't want to make a health care proxy. They would say, just shoot me. Honestly, they would say that, Dr. Kennedy, just shoot me. But and then the wife would usually look at them and say, I'd like to shoot you, but they don't let me do it. But I know that most people would like to live as long and healthy as they possibly can. And we'll come back and we'll talk about what you could do right now that's coming out of this wonderful book, Institute, and all of the research around it that isn't requiring another 10 or 20 years of research, but can make a real difference in your life immediately. And for those of you, I'm hoping to speak with Dr. Kennedy on another show where you can actually call in and ask some questions. I can't imagine anything that would be more useful to our life. This is Generation Bold. Don't you go anywhere. It,
but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da.
So we're off the air for a second, off the taping for a second, and we're going to go right back on because usually commercials would come in, Dr. Kennedy, but we're cutting them out so that we can, and then we'll re-edit so that we can get in a full four segments with you and still get you out by two. Okay?
Great.
So I'm ready to go.
Everything okay so far?
Oh, brilliant. Wonderful.
Great.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
And this is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the fountain of truth about aging, the only show that really looks at all aspects of health, wealth, travel, and, of course, relationships. So one of the things that is very important as we age is that we have great relationships. I'm here right now with a very important mover and shaker in the field of aging, perhaps one of the great leaders that I don't want to embarrass him, but I feel that way every time I read other people who are considered to be leaders, and then I read what you say. It just seems so lucid to me. We're here with Dr. Kennedy, who is the CEO and president of the Buck Institute. So let's talk about that. There are many people who actually say that older adults are really not worth the candle. I'm going to make it really plain. That we shouldn't be doing research on aging and just make people live longer, and it's expensive, and their relationships diminish, and who needs them? What do you say about that?
Well, if we want to go down that path, we should just encourage cigarette smoking again. I think that, you know, it's kind of misleading. We are working on aging. You know, much of the research that the NIH sponsors is on things like Alzheimer's, cancer. Most cancers have happened to older people, diabetes, a whole range of other diseases. The biggest risk factor is aging. And so I think there's a bit of a semantic problem here. We're scared to death of getting sick, and so we want people to treat Alzheimer's, but we're not recognizing the fact that aging is probably a cause that's driving these diseases. And what would be even better than treating Alzheimer's is not getting Alzheimer's. So our belief is that if we can slow aging, we can prevent the onset of these terrible diseases and keep people healthy longer, rather than the approach we're taking now, which is to wait till you get sick and then give you very expensive treatments that keep you sick longer.
So being sick is very expensive. We all know that our national debt, our budget, really can't sustain the cost of health care. There is a consumer price index, and then there's an ECPI, an elder consumer price index. And there's inflation there. and deflation in the regular economy. For older adults, the inflation is the cost of medicine and health care. So we will save millions. I don't think anybody says that we would not be saving millions. But I think, Dr. Kennedy, you might want to mention your view of what it'll mean to live longer. It won't mean to live longer and be a non-productive human being.
Yeah, I'm not sure I want to live longer if I'm not productive. You know, I think that the question of whether people should live longer or not, the answer is really, it depends. I think about it for myself. I don't want to judge for others. But for me, you know, if I'm really sick and I can't function, I don't know. But that's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to keep people healthy longer. And I really view aging research as more of a preventative approach. We want to stop those intrinsic processes that are happening as you get older that make you get sick, and also that cause you to have functional decline, so you can't run as fast or play tennis anymore. And we believe that if we target these things, it's going to be easier than waiting till you get sick and trying to put you back together again. It's going to be more cost effective, and it's going to be a real economic boost, because if you look at the demographic changes that are happening right now with such a large percentage of the population over the age of 65, if those people are all sick, then we have an economic nightmare. People are calling it the silver tsunami.
Yes.
And I think that if we can keep people healthy, then it's really a golden opportunity, because those people, it's great to have people with experience and wisdom in society. You know, and if people are, I tell people all the time, if you're 65 and you're healthy and you're working, you're enjoying your work, then don't retire. Keep working. Retrain for something else. You know, volunteer. Find new meaning that you can really contribute in, to society and be happy. And I think if we keep people healthy, they'll find ways to do that.
You know, we've had artists and writers and performers. Somebody who just did three operas in New York on aging, operas on aging. She's a jazz mogul, really. And all these people were over the age of 80 or even over the age of 90. So if you're healthy and you're older, it's the greatest blessing for yourself and your community. Now, I do also know on a totally different note that you do believe that people should know their genetics. Why do you feel that way, and is there any really practical way for us to understand our genetics?
Well, I think it's still not easy. So you have companies like 23andMe. I did 23andMe. I found it really interesting. But now they give you all of this information, but they're limited in how they can interpret it for you. So it's not the genetic information that is not that useful to the average person unless we can really find a way to explain it to people. And so what I'm hoping emerges is that we really embrace this genetic information and get that information out to the general population. I want to know whether I'm at risk for various diseases. And I think that my lifestyle choices are going to have a big impact on my likelihood of getting those diseases. So, you know, if you look at the studies on exercise or diet, people are protected from a whole range of age-related diseases by incorporating effectively those things into their life, healthy diet, I mean. And I think that it would be real motivation for people if they're at risk to really take those things seriously. And I think it'll help if they do. So I'm of the opinion personally that I want to know as much information as possible. And if you add to that the fact that, you know, the amount of genetic information we can really interpret is still relatively small, but as the research goes on, we're going to learn more and more and more, and so that genetic information is going to be more valuable to you as you go forward. So I like the idea of knowing as much as I can know about myself.
No, I absolutely agree, and I understand that some people might have some hard decisions to make. In my own life, I'm trying to see if I do have any propensity to ovarian cancer. I tell my listeners everything. And then if the answer is yes, I may have a hard decision to make. Then a lot of women have those decisions. But I would rather know. And, of course, you can pick and choose what you know. But where I think knowing this is really important, every time I hear anything about successful aging, a lot of it is in our hands. self-care when it comes to nutrition, exercise, sleep, relationships, spirituality, I don't mean religion, but creativity, makes a very big difference. And when we come back, I'm going to ask you point blank, what do you do? What do you do in your own life that you've learned might keep you healthier longer and living longer? And what is the best breakthroughs that we've found recently? Maybe it'll motivate some people to get away from the TV and away from the potato chips because it sounds great to say that lifestyle makes a difference. It's a little different to be motivated, particularly when you're older and isolated, to do anything about it. And as the cheerleader for aging, I want to cheerlead. I want them to know in concrete ways what we can all do. And we'll be back in just a moment, and you're going to hear this right from the expert, Dr. Kennedy. Don't you go anywhere.
But that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da-da-da-da.
All right, I hate to do this to you, but we're going to go right into the next segment so that we can be on time. I'm ready, Stuart.
You may think that I'm full of it. Doesn't bother me, not even a bit, 'cause I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da, 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 da.
You know, I'm feeling a little bit selfish. For those of you who just tuned in, this is Adrienne Berg. This is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. And I'm feeling selfish for this reason. I am actually physically in the Buck Institute in California, which is, by the way, a beautiful architectural work of art as a building, with many other works of art in the building. And people, basically everybody I saw in every lab had their head down. I could never tell you what they looked like because they were so hunched over their microscopes and they were so hunched over their equipment that I only was able to see their backs. I mean, this was the epitome of people being focused. So you have all this fabulous research on Alzheimer's, on aging in general, on living longer, on macular degeneration, Huntington's disease, maybe saying that wrong, and Parkinson's. But what I want to know is what to eat. That's why I feel selfish. And I have the CEO, and I have who is also the president of the Buck Institute, Dr. Brian Kennedy, with me. And I'm asking him what he does in his own life and what he would recommend for his own children and for all of us, and whether it would be different at different ages. What do you say about that, Dr. Kennedy?
That's several questions, and I can answer it on several levels.
It is.
So let me start at the top. So
yes.
What we should eat is less. Most of the studies in aging research suggest that something called calorie restriction extends lifespan. And I would define that as reducing the calories down to the amount where you get everything you need. And so there's no malnourishment, but nothing else. So for a human my size, I'm about 6'1 and 190, then I would want to eat around 1,600 calories a day. Now, I don't actually do that, but that's what the research suggests would work. The problem is that the FDA recommends that we should eat, for someone my size, around 2,200 calories a day. The average American my size is eating 3,800 calories a day. And so not only are we not going in the direction we need to go, we're going in the wrong direction. And that's what's driving the obesity. That and inactivity is what's driving the obesity and diabetes epidemics. And it's what's causing life expectancy to stop going up for the first time in a very long time. At least the data is beginning to suggest that. So less is the first answer. Beyond that, I think that it's healthy nutrition is so important, and it's becoming more and more difficult in today's society where we're, you know, working constantly. We don't have time to really prepare meals. The cheap food you get is often really bad for you. Being conscious about a healthy diet is really important. And so for me, as we delve down deeper, it gets a little bit more controversial. So for me, what I think the research is saying is that diets that are rich in vegetables, fruits, that are low in things like dairy, red meat, and low in processed food, particularly processed sugars, are probably the healthiest diets. If you look at people that in various parts of the world that live a long time and have healthy diets, they tend to have diets that are like that. We reported a study about a year ago with collaborators at University of Southern California, where it was determined that the healthy diet when you're young may be different than you get older. So the people with a low animal protein diet had lower mortality. They were at early ages, but after about 65 to 70, the people that had a higher protein intake had lower mortality. So it's definitely true that things are going to change with age, and we need to understand why. And I kind of think that's where the nutrition research is going right now, that we're going beyond telling people, well, eat healthy, and we're trying to understand what's the healthiest balance of macronutrients, so proteins, carbohydrates, fats, and micronutrients in the diet that's going to give you the best chance of staying healthy and preventing disease. And I think that understanding those balances is the approach we're taking now. And then the step beyond that is to say that we're all different. We all have different genetics and we all have different lifestyles. So it may well be that the healthiest diet for you at the end of the day is going to be somewhat different than the healthiest diet for me. So I think we're learning a lot from this nutritional research, and we're going beyond saying this is what your mother told you, eat healthy, and we're starting to tell people in general how to eat healthy, but we need to personalize that strategy and say that, well, in your situation, you should eat more protein, and in another person's situation, they might want to be closer to vegetarian, for instance.
So there are a lot of, they call them sometimes executive examinations. We hear all the time that in Bali, you can get for $500 a complete look at all of your propensities. And in the U.S., you might have to pay $5,000 for that. But is that what you're talking about, the tip-to-toe personalized executive exam that gives you an idea of what you're allergic to? Or is there something else? Is there even a next step going on?
I think that there's a lot of different kinds of approaches around that, full body scans. And I think they're all interesting, but people are sort of learning how to do it. And ultimately what I'd like to see is that a person comes in when they're maybe they're 40, 45, and they get a much more holistic approach where we look at an individual's genetics. We look at their family history of disease. We look at their lifestyle and their blood work to look at factors that are linked to disease or biomarkers of aging. And we take all of these things and put them together and say, you know, for you, these are where we identify your risks. These are the lifestyle choices we think are going to help you prevent these the various diseases, stay healthy longer, stay functional longer. And I'm not saying tell people to be vegan marathon runners.
Right.
The idea is to find modest changes to lifestyle that people can comply with and develop on a long-term basis that's going to help them. And then I think that the other thing that we're doing is developing drugs that slow aging. And at some point in the future, hopefully, we'll be able to tell people that maybe you want to take these drugs because they're likely to keep you healthy longer.
Yeah, you know, right now it's almost like the television shows with the do-it-yourself and you build your own home. And everybody is trying to figure it out. And that's what we're doing. Those who do care about their aging are looking at not eating the red meat. They're looking at leafy vegetables. With some, the vernacular maybe is the Mediterranean diet, how many hours of exercise they should do, and meditation.
Yeah.
So they're trying to take their own holistic approach, but that isn't the way Western medicine operates. It operates in a crisis situation with you have to have something wrong with you first. Let's see if we can cure it instead of let's prevent it. And isn't that the whole concept that you have with regard to aging? That if we tackle that, it's a very highly sophisticated prevention mode that I think you look at.
That's really how I view aging. I mean, we're very Western medicine oriented. We do the medical research in a way just like that's done at Harvard or MIT or any of those other places. But what we're trying to do is to target that process that's going wrong as you get old. And if we can slow that down, I define that as prevention. We're preventing disease. So I'm firmly in the Western medicine area, but what I don't like is the fact that we have this health structure in the U.S. where we don't do anything until you get sick, and then we spend a fortune. I don't think it's particularly effective. I think that's why we have we spend 2.5 times per capita on healthcare as any other country in the world, and our life expectancy, and by one recent study, is 50th in the world. You know, that's not getting much bang for your buck. And I think the way to do that is to take this knowledge we have, take our molecular biology and biochemistry and all the approaches that we've learned how to do, but to apply it toward keeping people healthy a little bit more. Now, I'm not saying we should stop trying to cure disease. If I get sick with Alzheimer's, I'm going to go begging for the latest therapy. I get it. But
right.
I think we need to focus more of our efforts on stopping those diseases from happening rather than treating them after they happen.
And when we come back, I do want to talk about drugs. You made a very fascinating comment about metformin. I want people to hear what you have to say about that. And also, I know that you are looking specifically at macular degeneration and other things. We'll talk about some more exciting things that the Buck Institute is doing. And this is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. There's no place else that you can get this information. And please take a look at our website, and that is generationboldradio.com. We have a magnificent book club there. We have a wonderful blog for you to read. And we have what we call the Golden Rolodex. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Doesn't bother me not even a bit, 'cause I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da 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 da. Da 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 da.
Okay, so we're off the air for a minute, and this is the last segment, Stuart?
Last segment.
It's not that long. It's only about 8 minutes. So I want to talk about metformin and just ask you in general what some of the exciting things that are going on in the Institute. But is there anything you would like me to ask you?
Well, I talk a little bit about this other drug called rapamycin, too.
Okay, good.
It didn't come up in the debate, but that's something that my lab's very focused on. So if we have a minute, I'd love to talk about it.
Sure, we do. Anything else? Because I don't want to miss anything you would like to bring up.
I think we've hit a lot of the main points.
We did.
So,
we did. Okay, we're ready to rock and roll. Stuart, take it away.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me not even a bit, 'cause I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da, 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 da.
And we are back. This is Adrienne Berg. This is Generation Bold. Don't forget, go to our website, generationboldradio.com, and listen to the entire 10-minute musical, I'm Inappropriate for My Age, and it was actually both words and music written by a Broadway composer and lyricist, especially for us. It is the only musical on aging, and we got it. So you can hear the whole thing on our website. Now, I want to go back because I really don't want to waste a minute. We have with us the CEO and president of the Buck Institute in California, Dr. Kennedy, and he is a leader in aging research. We talked about the everyday things we know, but there is a lot of work being done with regard to drugs. And you should know about them because they may be in your life one day, and they may already be in your life. So, Dr. Kennedy, what is the research? I think there are two top drugs that you wanted to discuss.
Yeah, and the point I want to make before we start is that I think what we're learning is we've already been treating aging, because what we're finding is drugs that slow aging in mice. They make the mice live longer. They make them healthy longer. But a lot of the drugs we're discovering are things that people are already taking. One of them is metformin. It's also called glucophage. This is something that a lot of your listeners are probably already taking for early-stage diabetes. And the research in animal models suggests that it actually makes animals live longer. And there's some data from human retrospective studies that suggest the same thing. So there are efforts right now by Nir Barzilai at Albert Einstein College of Medicine and others to get a clinical trial started where we actually measure human health span using metformin. So we're really excited about that, because I think that it's an entry point to really doing human clinical trials. And if we can get that accepted, I think we'll have a lot of other drugs that we can test in the near future, like rapamycin, which I can talk about as well, that may really have a robust effect on keeping people healthy longer.
Well, so tell us a little bit about rapamycin, because you're right, we have a lot of listeners who are diabetic and they probably know metformin, but they may not know rapamycin.
So rapamycin is also a clinically approved drug. It's used for forms of kidney cancer and some other rare disease indications. Also, it's used for organ transplant rejection. So the difference between metformin and rapamycin, really there are two differences. One is that metformin is generally considered a pretty safe drug. No drug is perfectly safe, but metformin as it goes is pretty safe. Rapamycin does have some side effects and toxicity, so I'm not encouraging people to take this now. The other thing that's different is that in animal models, rapamycin has a much bigger effect on aging. So it extends animal lifespan in mice by about 30%. So imagine 30% extension in lifespan. If we cured all cancer in people over 50, the average life expectancy would only go up 3 years, because two-thirds of the population don't die from cancer anyway, and the third that do would die 10 years later from some other disease like cardiovascular disease. This, if it had the same effect in mice that it does in humans, and we don't know that, imagine that would extend lifespan and probably health span by 15 years or so or more. So it has huge potential, and what we're trying to do in my lab is to modify the drug so that we can get that same efficacy for aging but reduce the toxic side effects. So I think that metformin may be the first thing that's tested, but there may be things that are much more effective that come down the pike, like rapamycin and other things out there on the horizon.
Now, you know, it seems to me, though, that I understand that FDA... lots of research needed, a long road to go. But what are the properties, if we can say it to a layman, I'm not sure we can, in these two drugs that are causing the effect of longevity?
Yeah, so they both have effects on metabolism. Metformin improves metabolism. That's why it's a diabetes drug. It improves glucose uptake in peripheral tissues like muscle, and it reduces glucose production in the liver. And there's a very tight link between aspects of metabolism and aging. And so it may be that the reason metformin works for aging is because of those same effects on metabolism that make it effective for diabetes. Rapamycin turns down this one cellular pathway called the TOR pathway. And this protein called TOR is a protein that senses the amount of nutrients in the environment. So it's very closely linked to this thing called calorie restriction I told you about.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a lot of nutrients around, you turn up TOR activity, and it makes the cell grow quickly, divide quickly, and it turns down its ability to respond to stress. It's saying, if conditions are good, let's go for it. If you have low nutrients, you turn down TOR, and that slows growth, but it turns up stress response. It makes the cell more resistant. And we think that both calorie restriction and rapamycin, which directly targets TOR, are doing that. They're making the animal more stress resistant, and that makes you live longer. So we're trying to find out more mechanistic information about why that works and try to find other drugs that do the same thing.
You know, in the moment or two we have, a lot of people, a lot of doctors, very respected, suggest fasting or a severe calorie restriction a few days a month.
Yeah.
Is that a substitute for just eating right all the time? Or what do you think?
I think that there is a good chance that periodic fasting will help with aging, but I don't think it's going to allow you to overeat the rest of the time. So if you have a healthy diet, and then to say on a 5-2 diet where you eat minimal calories 2 days a week, or you're on some kind of diet where you do periodic fasting once a month for a few days, I think the data suggests that's going to be helpful, but it's not going to allow you to go have Big Macs every day.
Understood. Yeah, no, yeah, I understand that. Yeah, I just know how people really like to live, but that's my problem.
Yeah, I know. I understand too. Also, the animal data in mice where you do these periodic fasting studies suggests that it may be beneficial to mice for most of their lifespan, but it may be more detrimental in very old mice. So there may be a point at which fasting isn't so healthy for you anymore, and we don't know what the human data on that looks like yet.
Well, you know, I'm hoping that you just get millions poured into the Institute and that you're able to run with it in any direction you want to go, because so much work will make so much of a difference to everybody. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks. It's my pleasure. Happy to do it.
Okay. And we have only a few seconds, and you know that at the end of every week, I try to encourage you to get out and be the best you can be. So get out there, kids, and make it happen.
I'm inappropriate.
Okay, so that was great.
Good. I thought it went well. Seemed like it.
I thought it was terrific. I'll send a link to it to Juniper, and it should be on. It should air this Sunday morning from 10 to 11 Eastern time.
Okay.
But you know, it's different times in different different stations, and I really so much appreciate this. It was really wonderful.
That's great. Are there any local stations where it's on?
I'm going to find out. We have an affiliate manager who will tell me every place we can turn it on. There's also an app. People can listen to it on their phone. And then we archive it, and people can listen to it anytime they want on the website. So it's
great.
Really,
so
not
I'll,
hard
we'll
to hear.
We'll send a link out to our board and advisory council and members and stuff to the website, then that might be the easiest way.
Good. So we'll send them that. And if they really want to listen live, they can listen on their phone. We'll send you the app as
okay,
well.
Great. It's wonderful.
All right. We got through an entire discussion on aging without mentioning telomeres. Don't you think that's great?
We could talk for hours about this, that's for sure.
I know. There's so much to talk about. So thank you so much, and take care. We'll get all the information out to you.
Great. Sounds good.
Right.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.